Today's episode of Ariel Helwani's MMA show contains explicit language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Back in your life on this Wednesday, October 30th, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome back to the program. Hope you are doing well. I am in New York City, and of course, the eyes of the MMA world are focused squarely on the Big Apple. We are literally just days away now, hours away, you can say, from perhaps the most anticipated fight of the year, the most anticipated fight card of the year, the 500th event in UFC history, UFC 244, of course, Saturday night, November 2nd, Madison Square Garden, the world's most famous arena, the Mecca, Nathan Diaz versus Jorge Masvidal. And, we would be remiss if we don't spend the majority of today's program on that fight and that fight card. That is what we will be doing. We have a lot to discuss. And it's amazing because, as I said on Monday, I think we were all very excited about this fight. And then I think we all thought we may have lost the fight late last week. And then it came back. And I think sometimes in life, when you think you lost something and then you regain it, you actually appreciate it more. And that's certainly how I feel about this fight, because it was very depressing for a minute there, thinking that the fight was no more. And then it came back and it's on. And I think now I'm even more excited, if that's possible, for Masvidal Diaz. This fight, in my opinion, represents everything that is great about MMA. Two guys who took the long and hard road to Broadway. Two guys who have seen and done it all. Two guys who have stumbled more often than not. Honestly, I mean, these are guys with double-digit losses. Again, in boxing, you got double-digit losses, you're a journeyman. You're not a factor. You're not headlining MSG. But this represents what's so great about MMA, what we love about MMA. That a loss doesn't mean as much as it does in boxing, that you can reinvent yourself. Last year, Jorge Masvidal didn't fight. He was inactive. His last fight prior to this year was a sort of ho-hum fight against Stephen Thompson at MSG, nowhere near the main event. And then he repackages himself. He comes out. He fights Darren Till in enemy territory. He knocks out Darren Till, three-piece Minnesota, all that stuff backstage. It helps him. He knocks out Ben Askren, fastest knockout in UFC history. And now all of a sudden, here he is, a guy who's been in this game for 16 years, who fought on the streets of Miami, who just kind of was a mid-tier fighter. All of a sudden, he's become a superstar, and he's fighting a legitimate superstar. The man who created the BMF title, the man who maybe defended that title last week in the midst of that whole drama with USADA and the UFC, the great Nathan Diaz. So today on the program, we're going to talk a lot about that fight. Back end, we'll actually talk to the man who helped reinvent, repackage Jorge Masvidal, Abraham Cowa, his manager who has been by his side for the past couple of years. There's a great story to be told here, and I'm happy that he is willing to come on the show and tell the story of how he was able to get this man on track. But first, what a pleasure it is to be joined in studio by my colleague and friend, the great Mark Raimondi of ESPN, who is often on this program from his home, but now he's in studio.
I'm right here.
He's back. New York's own.
I'm right here.
It's got to be fun to cover an event in New York.
Within arm's reach.
Yes, Ariel. It's so nice.
First time we've done a live taping of a show together in a while.
That's true. Right?
Over a year, probably.
Now, back in the old MMA fighting days, we would do preview shows right on Friday afternoon. This is kind of like our preview show, but it's Wednesday in podcast form, and I like it. I'm excited.
I'm here. I'm ready.
You were going to be on regardless of what happened last week, but now it's even better that you're on because of what happened last week, because you are more in tune with that kind of stuff than anyone covering this sport. So now that the dust has kind of settled, and maybe this isn't the end of this particular story, but it seems like we're now transitioning back to the fight itself. This is a very general question, but I'll just ask it. Like, how do you feel about how those 35 to 40 hours went Thursday, Friday? How do you feel about how it all went down between Nathan Diaz, the UFC, USADA, and of course, the New York State Athletic Commission?
That is a very broad question. Yeah, it was touch and go for a while. It was touch and go for a while. And I think that as we reported, Ariel, last Thursday night, Nate Diaz was never actually suspended by USADA. That actually never happened. It was really him that came out, and he was the one that started kind of this domino effect of events to happen. Whereas if he didn't do that, I have to wonder where we would be right now. We may not even know right now. If he never came public with the fact that he had an atypical finding in his drug test results. I don't know if we know, and maybe we find out after the fight, and which could have been also troublesome if that happened. So he outed himself. He's the one who said it, and then within a 36-hour period, wheels went in motion. USADA was able to mobilize. The Smyrtle Lab in Salt Lake City was able to mobilize, and they were able to get him cleared, really on two different counts, right? They did find a supplement that indeed had the substance that he took that was in his system, and also it was such a low amount of this substance, the LGD 4033, that it wouldn't have even made agreed on principle that USADA and the UFC had made August 31st. So I think that to sum it up, they came to the right decision as far as letting him fight. It just happened very quickly. And it happened quicklier is not even a word, but if it was, it would apply here. It happened more quick than it would have for others. If it wasn't a Nate Diaz, if it wasn't a main event fight coming up at Madison Square Garden this week in just 9 days later, it would not have happened as fast. I believe that.
Okay, so how do you feel about the people, A, pundits, B, fans, C, fighters who were affected by this in the past who say, this isn't fair. It's supposed to be, you know, unbiased. You shouldn't expedite just because this guy's a headliner, because the fight is happening. You know, hey, I had to wait months to be cleared. How do you feel about that? Do you think that it is fair how this was done, or do you think that it wasn't fair? Or perhaps, hey, it wasn't cool how it was done in the past, but maybe now a new precedent has been set.
I can understand the frustration of fighters like Sean O'Malley or a Tom Lawler who was suspended for a very similar substance for 2 years, who, if that happened today, in today's UFC, under today's anti-doping policy, may not have been suspended at all, or maybe 6 months, something along those lines. Someone like a Josh Barnett, who actually didn't get suspended by USADA, but his process took 18 months, and that caused him to miss 18 months of his career, late in his career, when he could have been making money fighting. So I can understand the frustration of all those people, and what I did like about how a lot of them came out with it is that there was nuance in their message. Everyone just about said they did the right thing. They came to the right conclusion in the end, but boy, they were speaking, I wish that could have happened for me, where it could have been resolved so much faster than it actually was. And Nate Diaz got special treatment, which is weird to say because Nate Diaz is a guy who has been kind of adversarial and at odds with the UFC over the course of really his entire career. And they almost, and them and USADA were almost kind of fighting for him. It was very, although that was a different message than he had in the conference call the other day, but it's the whole situation is strange.
Are you surprised that they were able to figure this out to clearly exonerate him like they did as quickly as they did?
I'm slightly surprised, but then again, I'm not, because let's not forget, it wasn't all that long ago. It wasn't even a year ago where the UFC moved an entire card to accommodate John Jones. The Nevada Athletic Commission wasn't going to license John Jones for that fight back last December, in December 2018, UFC 232. And on Sunday, before a Saturday fight, they picked up and moved the entire card to California, where John Jones was licensed, and the entire card had to move, every single fighter. So I'm not surprised, because you talked about precedent earlier.
Pardon the pun. I'm not surprised.
Not surprised, exactly. As you mentioned earlier, there is a precedent for scrambling to get that information quicker when it comes to headlining fighters. Now, I understand the criticism. If that was someone in the prelims, it probably would have been like, oh, all right, you have this finding in your test. We're not sure if we're going to suspend you, but you can't fight next week. We'll figure it out. You know, we'll get back to you. We'll investigate this. Whereas if it's a headlining fighter, I guess that's just business, right? I mean, at the end of the day, the UFC pays USADA a lot of money. USADA is working for the UFC. I mean, the UFC is a client. So they I guess, put wheels in motion and to accommodate their clients, they were able to get that cleared. I think they came to the right conclusion, though.
Would it be fair to think that things may change as a result of this? That he may have changed the system, that now if this happens, it will get resolved quicker than it has in the past? Or, again, is it only happening this quickly because it's Nate Diaz fighting in 8 days at MSG?
I think it could. It could happen quicker, because already I pointed to Neil Magny last week in that article that we wrote on Thursday, because he's kind of the case study for this exact substance, whereas he had it in a very small amount back in the spring. And he also, like Nate, came out on social media himself and said, hey, this happened. I don't know where it came from. I didn't take it. You know, I'm innocent. USADA's looking into it. And then a few months later in September, USADA declare him. Now, that's a much longer period than the 36 hours that we had last week with Nate Diaz, but it does show that USADA is getting, I mean, they are moving in that direction and they are applying thresholds. Thresholds have been talked about now for this entire year, if not going back to last year, putting thresholds on certain substances because these labs now are testing for banned drugs down to like a ridiculously microscopic level. And they're realizing now that what's happening is a lot of fighters who did not intentionally try to cheat are getting popped, and it's not fair. And they're trying to take measures in place. And USADA and the UFC did come to an agreement in principle on August 31st to add thresholds, including for the one that, you know, for the substance that Nate Diaz tested positive for. There was a meeting in California like a week before this that discussed thresholds. Jeff Nowitzki was there. Neil Magny was there. Some commission people were there. Mike Mazzulli, the head of the ABC. Brian Dunn, the new head of the ABC. So across the board, even commissions are trying to add these thresholds as well. So the wheels were already in motion for this, but to make a long story short, Nate Diaz, I think, increased, accelerated that those discussions to, all right, we got to start, you know, never mind the discussion. We're doing it.
So in 2015, this relationship started, right, between the UFC and USADA.
That's right.
And not that long ago, they actually re-upped the deal,
yes.
Correct? Are you surprised that the UFC is still doing this? Like, I understand why they initially did this deal. Great idea from Lorenzo Fertitta. And remember, there was a point, especially in that run that Vitor Belfort had, where he was just knocking everyone out and it seemed a little bit funky, and Dana White, UFC president, was getting very defensive, like, hey, you know, we're doing everything. What more do you want from us? The government regulates us. Of course, he's fighting in Brazil, and you know, but hey, all right, fine. And then he says, all right, you media, you keep asking us, we're going to do this deal. Now, I don't necessarily believe that. You know, they're about to sell the company. They're packaging it,
yes,
into this nice little, you know, package, if you will. You got the Reebok deal. You got USADA. You've got this TV deal coming up. Like, it's all, you know, it's all aligning for them to make them seem as mainstream as it gets. But now in this day and age, you're only shooting yourself in the foot with, like, these things wouldn't come up if it was just New York testing him, right? Or
yes,
if it was just these other commissions testing him. Are you surprised that they're still doing this?
Well, I mean, to that point, if you're going to use a WADA lab, which New York does, which California does, which Nevada does, they use the Smyrna lab in Salt Lake City. If you're going to use a WADA lab, it would indeed be finding these things. So if there was no USADA, you could make an argument. Let's say New York was doing out-of-competition testing for Nate Diaz leading into this fight, and there was no USADA, wasn't even in play, and New York did the testing, and we have no data for years about these tainted supplements, these contaminated supplements. My theory is that if New York was doing it, they saw that atypical finding in Nate's system, and the fight's off. That's it. There's no discussion. USADA was actually able to bring a ton of data and science and scientists and experts to say, hey, no, actually, what we've seen over thousands, tens of thousands of UFC tests, that this is most likely a tainted supplement, and it ended up being a tainted supplement as they were able to prove and show. So that's a theory. I don't know. Maybe that's not the case at all. Maybe they don't even do out of competition testing in New York, and Nate goes into the fight. No one knows anything, but it's good and bad. I think that USADA has done a lot of good, and USADA has done some not good. And I feel like I don't know if commission testing is enough.
Mm.
I don't know if commission testing is enough. I don't feel like it is. I think that commissions just don't have enough money to really clean up the sport, and they're not as committed to doing it. With that said, I think there is a middle ground in between just straight up commission testing, which is lackluster, and what USADA is doing. There's a middle ground. But USADA is learning on the fly. I mean, and science is changing all the time, and the sport's changing, and it's been rocky. It's been a rocky 4+ years with UFC and USADA.
You just said something that stuck with me, and I do believe it's true. They are learning on the fly. I think everyone is learning on the fly, from the commissions to the officiating, the judges, the referees. Like, this sport is still in its infancy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I get annoyed when people go online like, oh, what about this in the past? And what about this? Like, things are evolving. Things are changing. Do you want things to stay the same, or do you want things to try and get better? And so yes, the guys in the past may have been screwed, but maybe this is the beginning of a little bit of change to help them. Maybe a tough question, but I'll ask it anyway. Do you believe Nate Diaz's story?
Wait, now, that's a loaded question, because the story that USADA and UFC are telling is very different than the one that Nate Diaz told on the conference call on Monday.
How so?
Well, Nate Diaz said on the conference call on Monday that it's all BS. I didn't test positive for anything. It's all made up. They're just trying to get leverage on me. It's all a conspiracy.
Right.
That's what he said. I don't believe that. I don't believe that.
Right.
I mean, I believe that there was a small amount of that SARM in his system, and I believe that they mobilized very quickly. They tested his supplements. They found it, and it was for a very small amount, and they cleared him. I believe that. And like I said, I think they came to the right conclusion. It just happened a lot faster than it would have for a lot of other people. I think Nate doesn't trust any of these regulatory people because of the history there with his family, with Nick, with himself. So I think that he off the bat, he doesn't trust them. So I think that's why he's saying those types of things.
Yeah, this idea that the UFC wanted him out of this fight is ludicrous.
Right.
Now, what I find to be endearing is the fact that he didn't want to live with a secret, right? He's like, no.
Oh, yeah.
You're telling me, hey, someone probably said, hey, we're going to figure this out. This happened. We're going to figure it out. Stand by. He's like, no, I'm not standing by because I don't want this in my closet. And oh, by the way, if at some point, because right now, as he said on Monday, we're buddies, right? We both want me to fight on November 2nd.
Yes.
But what happens in 4 months when there's a big Conor fight on the horizon and we're not buddies? Who's going to leak this, right?
Right.
Who's going to say this about me? So I want it out there and I don't want this hanging over my head. So that's very endearing. How do you feel about the way he handled this whole situation? Because it was almost mesmerizing to see him come out with this statement out of nowhere. I mean, just an absolute bombshell Thursday afternoon. And then double down the next day and be like, yo, I'm not getting on this flight unless you guys figure this out. And not just figure it out. I want a public exoneration. Like, and the wording they used there was just as clear cut as it can be. Like, there was no wiggle room whatsoever, no gray area. The fact that this guy had essentially put them against the ropes, turned the tables on them, and said, like, you need to honestly, like, beg. You need to beg me to figure this. Like, and then here's the best part. They put the statement out, and then he's quiet. Like, now we're all wondering, okay, like, did that suffice? Yeah. Was that okay? How did you feel about the way he handled all of this?
Well, I think there's no other way to say it than he handled it in the most Nate Diaz way possible.
Fair enough.
He didn't handle it the way that most people would, because I feel like most people, most fighters put in that situation. I mean, even if it was you and me in that situation, and they said, look, this is a weird thing, but we think we know what it is. Don't say anything about it. We'll wait for the fight is over. We'll investigate further. We're sure it's going to be okay. Just keep it on ice for now. And Nate's like, F that. I'm going to go on Twitter and put a statement out in the notes. I'm going to screenshot the notes on my phone with a statement. And my favorite quote, Ariel, from that conference call was the quote about how, actually, I shouldn't even say my favorite. There was a few very good, very interesting quotes on that conference call, but it was an interesting call. But one of my favorites was where he said, I'm not cheating if I'm not going to fight. So if you're saying there's something in my system, which there wasn't, that's what he said, which I didn't take anything. Then it's only cheating if I go into the fight with it. So let's push back the fight. It's got to get out of my system sometime. We'll do it in a few months when it's out of my system, and then I won't be cheating. And it's like, I don't care about ruining your fight. I care about ruining my legacy. You're not going to ruin my legacy. That was his quote. And that was a really interesting quote that he gave, because he was like, it's going to get out of my system eventually. So I don't want to be a cheater. I don't want anyone to have an excuse.
Yeah.
Win or lose. You know, what it is, what it's not. So I thought that was very, he's been an advocate for clean sport as far as steroids and performance enhancing drugs has gone, and he in many ways did live up to that.
Do you think, let's say he wins this fight on Saturday, do you think this follows him? Like, initially when this came out, you saw some of his foes, Dustin Poirier, Eddie Alvarez, Conor McGregor, take shots, dance on his grave, right? You saw very few people support him. John Jones did support him. Ronda Rousey supported him, his friend. But do you think that this will follow him, or do you think that the way it has been handled and the way he was exonerated, no one believes that. I think that, look, I've been asked this question before. People will say, like, okay, who's one guy that would shock you if he popped, right? Who's one guy? Mm-hmm. At this point, it's hard to say in sports. Like, you never know. Even someone's injured and they're trying to, you know, recover quickly. They're going to take something. Who knows? But this is a guy who, if we're being honest, like, would be at the top of that list,
yes.
right? As far
yes.
as a PED user. Do you think this will follow him, or do you think that it's been treated in a way where it's kind of done at this point?
I feel like he was already exonerated in the court of public opinion before they even came out on Friday with this information. I feel like people feel like they know Nate Diaz and they don't think he would do that. And I mean, I keep going back to the fact that you think like Nate Diaz is sitting there before this fight and he's saying like, oh, let me take some LGD 4033. Do you think he even knows what the hell that is? Absolutely not.
Right.
He has no idea. He has no idea. I mean, I believe him. I believe that story. I believe the UFC and USADA story. And I think that people are already behind him. I didn't see outside of the people who may have a stake in not being behind him, like the Poiriers and the Alvarezes. The fans, for the most part, I think were supportive of him from the jump.
Yeah. And worth noting, Poirier later apologized.
He did.
And actually, even then, it's almost like Nate has inspired people to, you know, as he said in my interview with him, the truth shall set you free, which is amazing because he said that last month. We did the interview last month. He said it multiple times. And then this happens where he essentially comes out with his truth. But Poirier then started talking about, you know, what happened with their fight and why that fell through, which I thought was interesting a year later that he was starting to come out with this information. So the fight is on. It is happening as
yes.
of right now, as of Wednesday.
Knock on wood.
Knock on wood, yes. After this, we're going to go to the open workouts, and I'll talk about something that's popped up about the open workouts. But I just want to ask, you know, because I've been talking a lot about this fight and have written about it, and I just get like – And maybe you'll laugh at me. Like, I get a little emotional when I think about this fight and what it represents. I'm being honest. You know, these are guys who should not be here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who 2 years ago, if you would have told me we're going to headline the biggest card of the year at MSG, I'm not talking about the Bojangles Arena or the Smoothie King Center. I'm talking about MSG, right? In a non-title fight, forget about this BMF stuff. Like, it's a non-title fight, right? These two guys, 16 years, 15 years, who have double-digit losses, like, this stuff doesn't happen. These two guys who have these passionate fan bases, who at times have been screwed by bad judging or officiating or things like that, to be in this spot, like, you know, the sport is mainstream, but this really feels like a hardcore fan's dream, right? To see these guys, like, no one hates these guys, right? They just, in my opinion, represent everything that we love about MMA. How do you feel about it? Do you share that same sentiment? Am I just a crazy softy here? Or, like, if we take a step back from our jobs, even from our reporting, like, this is a special thing that none of us saw coming, this fight.
I agree 100%. And forget all the other stuff that's around it, what happened last week and, you know, the BMF stuff, you know, whatever that is. What it really is it's an inspiring story for both of them, because these were two guys who were never marked as stars ever. One of them started fighting in 2003, Jorge Masvidal. One of them started fighting in 2004, Nate Diaz. And they weren't marked as stars then. They weren't marked as stars 10 years into their career. They were never stars. They were, you know, there were a couple of headlining events here and there, but they were never, as Dana White would say, needle movers, at least to the UFC, and they persevered, and now they've been around for, you know, 15, 16 years, and in 2019, somehow they've been able to fight their way up and develop a following through sheer hard work and will, through not a lot of, the UFC hype machine was not behind these guys. And to me, it shows that no matter where you are, I think it's an inspiration to, or it should be an inspiration to so many fighters on the UFC roster who maybe they're not even ranked right now. Maybe they're an exciting fighter. They have personality, you know, but they win some, they lose some. That's how Jorge Masvidal's career was for a long time. The guy fought everywhere. He fought in Japan. He fought for Bodog. He fought, for Strikeforce. And he got choked out with an inverted triangle by Toby Amada in Bellator years and years and years ago. Like one of the craziest submission, losses that anyone has had. And he's fought himself back by staying authentic, by staying true to himself, didn't sell out, as some people would say, and no one ever got behind him, but he got behind himself, and he found himself now in the main event at Madison Square Garden. And it's a very similar story, both of them, and I think that's why there's so much respect there, because, you know, they've seen each other from across the way in Strikeforce. You know, Nick Diaz was in Strikeforce, Masvidal was in Strikeforce, and, you know, Nate would see him, and they've kind of respected each other from afar, and they've taken parallel paths now to this MSG main event, and it's an inspiring story. It's why we love sports. It's why we love MMA.
There's a writer named Jason Gay who works for the
Wall Street Journal.
Wall Street Journal, who is doing a profile on Jorge Masvidal. Spoke to him yesterday, and he asked me a question that I didn't think of, and that has stuck with me since. And I want to ask you this question as well and get your take. He asked me if it would be accurate to state that Jorge Masvidal is the first superstar born in the ESPN era. And when I sat back and I was like,
That's crazy. That's even crazy to think.
Right? You think about a guy who didn't fight last year, who was pretty much out of sight, out of mind, returns on an ESPN Plus card in London against Darren Till. But what is really the headliner? What happens afterwards?
Yeah.
Gets talked about everywhere, is played on shows on ESPN, right? The talk shows, the debate shows. Then fights Ben Askren on a massive pay-per-view, on ESPN Plus pay-per-view. Does what he does in 5 seconds. I was at NBA Summer League the next day in Vegas. And like the first thing, and I'm going to name drop here, but what the hell? Vince Carter comes up to me and says, who's that guy that just knocked out the guy in 5 seconds? Everyone was talking about it, right? And then it gets replayed all week long on a quiet sports week the following week in July. And I'm starting to think, wait a second, there's something to this. Now, I did, and TST is writing this to me, I was going to bring up, there's two guys that you can make a case for, but I would argue that Masvidal is a bigger star.
Israel Adesanya.
Yes.
Yes.
Adesanya is a product of just having a great year, but I think that Adesanya would have had that year with or without ESPN.
Right.
Because, you know, he was just on the path to the title. Masvidal's not fighting for a title here, and he's as big of a star, if not a bigger star, in my opinion, than Israel Adesanya. And so I started to think, like, yes, I see it. Like, you see, like, he was on First Take yesterday. He was on Get Up.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Dan Lebertard shows have been great with
the
him.
The back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
ESPN wasn't covering the sport the way they do now because they weren't in business with it. That's just the nature of the beast. And to see now, this is what Dana White and company have always dreamed of, right? Oh, we get in business with ESPN. The trickle-down effect is we're covered on SportsCenter, good or bad. We're covered on all these other shows. First Take is talking. They're covering out 5 minutes in the midst of World Series, NFL, NBA is back, NHL is back, college football. There's so much going on, but they're still carving out time. And I actually think that he's right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think so too. Because let's be honest here. Jorge Masvidal has always been this guy.
Yeah.
He's always been this guy in interviews. It was really about the exposure. A few years ago, he was a few blocks from here at the Vox Media Studios talking to you in studio, talking about, you know, being the king of the sucker punch. Remember that interview,
yes,
the sit-down interview with him?
Yes.
And that's the same guy right now. And he was on MMAfighting.com, you know, God bless MMA Fighting, but it wasn't the exposure that ESPN gives him. So now he's saying the same things that he did three, four years ago, and he's saying them on ESPN, and it's like, oh wow, who is this Jorge Masvidal guy?
Right.
The mainstream, the casual fan is tuning in now, and I think you're right. That's a very good point.
Look, we're in this studio here. It's the South Street Seaport studio. So this is where they tape Get Up. I'll peel back the curtain. It's where they tape Get Up, First Take, and whatnot. And it's a very small space, right? And so everyone is here. Like, you see everyone when you're sitting there. And just today when I walked in, Pablo Torre, who's a huge star, tremendous guy, is talking to me. He's like, I might go to my first UFC event on Saturday. I'm in on this fight. Tell me about it. There's some guys who work for some other shows here, production guys, who love Masvidal because he's been here now a couple times. Some other Diaz fans. Stephen A. mentions him to me when I see him here. Like, and all I'm doing, like, I'm not saying this to name drop. I'm saying, like, they're on the radar, and this is a big sport. There's a lot going on in sports, and they're on the radar, and there's a lot of famous people coming.
Mm-hmm.
The president is coming. Robert Kraft is going to be there. They got this thing with The Rock, and it's just, yeah, I kind of feel like this is what they dreamed of. When they dreamed of being in business with ESPN, it was for moments like this, and it feels like it's paying off. Now, we'll see what happens with the pay-per-view. We'll see, you know, how it all turns out with the new pay-per-view format and all that, but it's an amazing way to look at what's happened in Jorge, and I think it's another wrinkle that people haven't been thinking about when it comes to this particular fight. Now, I wanted to mention something that as we're taping this at 2:38 Eastern, there was some talk. I'd heard about this last week, but it was first mentioned by Talk MMA on Twitter. That's the name of his handle, that Darren Till was having some visa issues, and that was potentially going to preclude him from coming to New York City to fight Kelvin Gastelum in the co-main event. And then that talk has heated up a little more over the last couple of days, and in particular today. And then Terez Owens, another online outlet, tweeted out that Jared Cannonier was a backup fighter. So this is what I can tell you. Darren Till And the UFC just tweeted this out. Due to a delay in travel, Darren Till will not be at today's open workout. So this is somewhat unprecedented, right? Like, by Tuesday, you are here, mm-hmm. and you're partaking in all this stuff. And we've seen a couple of times where guys are delayed here and there. But this isn't, as they put it, a delay in travel. Like, there's something going on, and it's his visa. Now, they seem confident that it's going to get fixed, but Cannonier is here, and he is in the midst of making weight. He is working out, and they're going to pay him if it doesn't, you know, turn out to be that he has to fight. But this is a potential thing now. It's a real thing. Gaslam is scheduled to fight Darren Till. Darren Till won't be at the open workouts, as I just said. And so, look, at the end of the day, we're all like, the main event is the main event, and that's the big one. But this is a great card from top to bottom. So I just wanted to put it out there for those that may be listening. The Till situation is developing. It's ongoing, but they seem confident that he is going to show up. And if he doesn't, it's going to be Cannonier versus Kelvin Gaslam. Incredible stuff.
Yes.
As if there wasn't enough drama this week, here's another one, which I can't remember off the top of my head, a situation where a fight of this magnitude like was coming down to the wire, whether or not the guy will show. And now for Darren Till, lucky that it's at 185, right? If it was at 170,
forget it.
Right?
Forget it. No way he's making that weight. And on top of that, if it does end up being Gastelum versus Jared Cannonier, we might be having a number one contender fight in the co-main event at MSG, right? The winner of that fight could get Adesanya. If Paulo Costa really is going to be out, I know you reported yesterday that he may be back by April.
Right.
But who knows? That could be a title eliminator. Cannonier is right there.
Sure.
Gastelum fought very close with Adesanya that last fight. Who knows?
Yeah. By the way, when I said the president is going to be there, TST is asking me to clarify whether or not it was the president of ESPN that I was referring to or the president of the United States. Which did you think I was talking about?
You're talking about Donald Trump, of course.
Okay. All right. Well, he wanted me to clarify that. He's always, you know, looking out for me, so I appreciate that. Other than the main event, which fight are you most looking forward to?
That's a tough call. I'm very fascinated by Kevin Lee versus Gregor Gillespie because I want to see where Gregor Gillespie is.
I hate the fact that it's happening at 155 for Kevin Lee.
Sure.
Why is he coming down?
I mean, he obviously feels like that would be his weight class for the long term, but I don't know if that is or not.
But he looked okay at 170.
I agree.
That was his last fight.
Completely agree.
Why
it
go
was
back?
Against Dos Anjos.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's not like he lost to some, you know, schmo.
Right.
No offense to the schmo.
Right.
Just some schmo. I don't know, but I do. What I like at that fight is because I just Gregor Gillespie. I think that he's excellent and he has the kind of wrestling that could even give Khabib trouble. So he's a guy that a lot of people have circled as you know, a lightweight contender. But I also want to see Johnny Walker. You know, I want to see what he can do against Corey Anderson. Corey Anderson's going to be the toughest test of his career. Johnny Walker wins that fight. Who knows? Maybe he's next for John Jones. There's so many really, really interesting fights on this card.
Oh, man. I mean, some other ones. I like the Julio Arce against Hakeem Dawoodu fight. Dawoodu looked great mm-hmm. in Edmonton back in July. I think that the Jennifer Maia, Caitlin Chookagian fight could mm-hmm. produce the number one contender
yep.
at 125. Edmund Shahbazyan has been an up-and-comer on our top 25.
Yeah, 25
against veteran Brad Tavares. Shane Burgos against Makwan Amirkhani is a fun fight as well. Makwan's look good. As you mentioned, Corey Anderson, Johnny Walker, Kevin Lee, Gregor Gillespie, Derek Lewis returning.
Against Blagoy.
Oh, man. Big fight.
It's a fun fight.
At heavyweight. Stephen Thompson back.
Of course.
First knockout loss in March. This is his first fight back against the surging Vicente Luque. And then Kelvin Gastelum versus either Darren Till.
Yeah. Wow.
And look, UFC 229 was the biggest fight card of last year, but we all kind of lamented the fact that it was a little top heavy.
Mm-hmm.
This time, I'm not just saying it, like top to bottom, there's an interesting fight on every 100%. Single spot here. Like there's
might be
a
the deepest card of the year.
Yeah.
Might be the deepest card of the year.
And that's why I like it. Like that's why I'm into it
yep.
because it's not just about the main event. Like we could do 2 hours right now on just the main event, but I love the fact that like the whole, like if you're a new fan and this is how it should be, if you've got a fight mm-hmm. of this magnitude, you need to get people. Remember what happened to Derek Lewis? At
yes.
229, right?
Balls was hot.
Everyone watched.
Yep.
And his popularity surged.
Yep. Got a title fight.
Fought
here last year.
Like 4 weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable.
Yep. Who will be the Derek Lewis of this card? Who will be the guy?
Maybe Derek Lewis. And also, I will say, the fact that Conor had his press conference last week and attached himself to this fight, I think only raises the stakes. Right?
Yeah.
It only, again, for the casuals, only raises the stakes. So, we'll see if he in fact does fight the winner, if the winner stands out and you know, sits out and waits for him to return. We'll see how that all plays out. His situation is still developing. They're going to meet with the UFC brass, his team, hopefully this week in New York, and try to figure out if they can get that fight done for January
10th. Connor will not be here, though, this week.
To the best of my knowledge.
As far as we know.
Yeah. But hey, it's only Wednesday.
You never know.
Mark, pleasure as always.
Thank you so much.
Great stuff, my man.
Fun.
Oh, it was a blast. Again, we could have done 2 hours on just that fight alone. But I thought the insight was great, especially on the commission stuff. So thank you as always. And I'm looking forward to covering the event with you this week in New York City. I'm also looking forward to each and every morning to the new ESPN Daily podcast hosted by the great Mina Kimes. She is prolific. She is incredible. Each morning I check out what they're talking about. This morning it was the Brooklyn Nets. Love that one. Highly recommend it, as I am now becoming a NBA guru myself. NBA Ariel, as Mark has coined.
NBA Ariel.
Sorry, excuse me. But that was great. And later this week, by the way, they are going to feature Jorge Masvidal, a conversation with our own Brett Okamoto about Jorge Masvidal and his trip there. So do check that out and check them out every morning. Subscribe to them wherever you get your podcasts. It's a phenomenal listen, and I really think they're doing great things over there. And oh, by the way, if you're looking for phenomenal listens, this Saturday, Peter Rosenberg and I of Cheap Heat fame will be hosting a pre-show, 98.7 FM here in New York, but also online, UFC 244 pre-show. Worlds colliding. Wrestling.
Talk some wrestling?
And MMA. Maybe a little.
Cain Velasquez versus Brock Lesnar.
The Rock.
WWE.
Maybe. Yes, that's tomorrow.
There you go.
All right. So at the top of this show, and even on Ariel and the Bad Guy, which comes out later today, spoke about the resurrection of Jorge Masvidal and how last year he wasn't even, you know, in the scene. He was out of sight, out of mind. He was on no one's mind, really. He was out. He did not fight. He was doing a reality show. His last fight prior to this year was against Stephen Thompson, MSG, and he was just kind of there. And now all of a sudden this year he has turned into one of the biggest superstars in the sport. And on Ariel and the Bad Guy, I credited our next guest, who has played, in my opinion, a huge part in the quote-unquote resurrection of Jorge Masvidal. And I've been asking him to do this interview for quite some time. He's a very busy man, but he has carved out a little time in his very busy schedule here in New York to talk to us about how he got this done. I am referring to the great Abraham Kawa, manager to the stars for the likes of John Jones, Jorge Masvidal, Tyron Woodley, Demetrius Johnson, Jared Cannonier, and many, many others, kind enough to give us some time here. Abe, how are you?
I'm doing good, Ariel. Thanks, man. Dude, I don't know if I'm going to be able to hold up to that bar you just set for me, man. That was pretty good. I appreciate you. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you. It is all 100% honest as far as I'm concerned. So just wanted to ask you a couple things before we get to Masvidal. A couple things brewing. Number one, is there anything, and I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but is there anything you could tell us about this Jared Cannonier situation?
No. I think as of right now, I believe Till is still the front runner. Not front runner, but I was told Till is going to be here. I'm not really sure, but he's definitely fighting on Saturday. So that's what I was told.
Okay, but Cannonier is going to try and make weight, and if he does, he'll be compensated.
Yeah. You know, it's not the first time the UFC does stuff like this. You know, just to make sure that these fights have someone properly prepared to step in, and you know, it's okay, it's fine. Yeah.
The other one I wanted to ask you about was Yoel Romero, your guy. Yesterday we find out Paulo Costa is out for the time being. His team tells me he can return in April, but it seems like there's a back and forth between Adesanya and Yoel Romero. In fact, Adesanya tweeting about him and then even revealing a text message conversation with his coach, Eugene Behrman, back in mid-October where they sort of anointed Yoel Romero as the guy. Is he, in fact, going to fight Israel Adesanya next for the belt?
I mean, as of right now, no. I would like that to happen. I mean, we would love for that to be the case. I think Yoel, if you look at what he's done in the last three fights, I tweeted out recently that, you know, in my opinion, in my book, and this is just my opinion, yes, I might be biased or not, but just from my eyes and, you know, being a fan of the sport, I don't believe Yoel lost his last two fights, really, like there. Like, they were not clear-cut. Against Rob, you know, the whole weight situation, I think, had a lot to do with it. I believe if we had the proper time to actually do the weight, he's probably, victorious that night. And probably the new champion. With that being said, he would probably have had defended against, because there would have been no injuries or no anything like that. He probably would have defended against one of the up-and-coming guys. So he would have been definitely the next guy there. Then you look at the fight with Paulo, and, you know, everybody can say what they want. They need to go back and look. And if you're a boxing fan, if you understand boxing, you will outbox that guy by a lot. He, people are like, oh, he can't take the things off. Well, look at the fight. He pummeled through punches that Yoel just realistically rolled with. He didn't get clean hit. He did get hit in the fight, but I think he did way more damage to Paulo than Paulo did to Yoel. So, again, I'm sitting back and I'm looking, and, you know, I've had this conversation with the matchmakers before, and, you know, sometimes they always tell me, it's like, you can't always say to yourself, okay, this guy won, this guy lost on a decision. When it's close, who would you rather be at the end of the night? Well, Paulo left in a wheelchair. Yoel was ready to fight the next week. So I think I would rather have been Yoel than Paulo. So, and I think on, I forgot what website it was, about 80% of the writers in the MMA media had Yoel winning. Obviously, the Brazilian media wouldn't have Yoel winning, but for the most part, it was Yoel winning. From what I found, you know, from what I saw. So I think Yoel, even though the losses are there, and I'm not denying them, I'm not saying that, you know, he couldn't have lost them. I just, in my opinion, they're wins. So why not do him versus Adesanya? Everybody says Adesanya is, you know, was put in a position to be there. I take nothing away from Israel. What he's done is absolutely marvelous. But all the guys he's beat, no one's ever the same after they fight Yoel. No one. I don't care who you are. They are not the same. Not one guy. And Rob, you saw it in the fight with Adesanya. We also saw it with the fight in Yoel Part 2. He's not the same guy. He just isn't. And the guys that Adesanya beat going up, you know, outside of Gastelum, which we've asked for Gastelum so many times. I don't know why the UFC would not give us Gastelum. I think Gastelum versus Yoel is a great fight at some point, you know. Realistically, it's like two guys that can wrestle like the Bane. I just think that's a great fight in general. We just can't get that fight. I don't know why. But outside of Gastelum, I think Yoel beat everybody. It doesn't I beat.
All right, so it remains to be seen. But hey, by the way, who's this Adesanya guy that you're talking about?
Stop with that. Stop with that. I know. I'm killing.
Adesanya. If you're going to fight him, you got to know his name.
Adesanya. Actually, not really, because calls Usman Marty, so maybe not.
All right. Okay, so that's a developing situation. We'll see how it turns out. Costa's team saying that, hey, he'd be ready to go in April. Clearly Romero wants it, and it seems like Izzy wants it, so that's half the battle. So let's see. But I really want to talk to you about Jorge, because that's why we're here. We're talking about 244 in that main event. And I think your part in this story is very important. As I said, first let's start with this. When did you first meet Jorge Masvidal?
I met Jorge Masvidal in Miami many moons ago. This was prior to me being in the business. And I was actually watching him fight Luis Palomino in, I think it was Glenn Rice's promotion. It was G-Force Promotions or something like that. And he lost that split decision, like most split decisions he's in, he loses. You know, I saw him lose that split decision, and I said, man, that guy didn't. There's no way he lost that fight. And, you know, it just sucked on that end. But I met him there, and I told him, hey, man, you know, just a fan. I was just a fan. I at that point, you know, I can't claim that I've been following Jorge since the Kimbo days. That's a lie. I did not. But I did then, at that point, after seeing him and seeing him in that fight, I was like, man, I'm interested in that guy. What's up? And my brother was with me, and he was like, dude, go to YouTube. You'll see who he is. And I was like, oh, shit, this guy represents Miami, man. This is who Miami is. So that's when I met him, and I, you know, just as a fan. And then I actually got to meet him, you know, and I got to speak to him a little bit more. It was when he fought Michael Chiesa. At the time, I represented Michael Chiesa. That's a funny conversation, because I spoke with Mike, and I actually tried my hardest in the nicest way possible not to take that fight with Mike. And I said, Mike, you know, why'd you pick Jorge? And he goes to me, man, I could beat him. And, of course, as a fighter, you know, it's their job to say they could beat everybody, and you want them to feel that way. And I told him, and I said, man, he's good. He's not. This is not an easy fight. This is not going to be an easy fight. And he acknowledged that, and Mike's a great guy. He's a trooper. He was like, you know what? I already told him I'm in. You know, this and that. Sorry, we're going to go fight him. We're going to go fight him. And we all know how that fight went. And it was, that to me, that was one of the best fights there was, because, you know, it is what it is. But I also did see Jorge that night, or the night before, struggle making weight. And he had to be carried off the scale. Right after he weighed in, his team came and grabbed him. And I was just like, man, this isn't good. This isn't healthy. So Jorge went on to go win the fight. And me being me, I went up to Jorge and I said, dude, great fight. If I were you, I would call out a big name. And he looked at me, he just smiled. And, like, you know, if Jorge doesn't really know you, he doesn't really mess with you like that. He just smiled, put his head down, and shook his head. And I told him, you should call out a big name, because, dude, you just beat one of the guys that I know the UFC is trying to push and make, you know, he's a tough winner. Mike came with a lot of accolades at that time. he was beating guys, and he was beating them quite handedly. So I told him, you have to do it, and you got to pick a guy that you go. You might as well, you know, this is your time. This is the moment for you to step up and take it. I think the fight right after that was Rustam Khabibov. And I was like, why is he fighting Rustam Khabibov? What is going on, you know? And we all know how that happened. And then the fight after that, I think, was Ally Akinta. And then we all know what happened in this robbery. So after Ally Akinta, I think he kind of, you know, woke up. He kind of shot me a text and he said, Abe, man, you know what? If you're still interested, I'd love to get on board with you. I think your energy is good. I said, all right, cool. So I met with him in Miami. We had a conversation. It was a tremendous negotiation between us because that guy doesn't want to give up anything whatsoever. And, you know, he is who he is. So just as hard as it is for him to get on your show, Ariel, it's just as hard for me to get him to sign the contract. Okay, so just so you understand, that's how it went with me and Jorge. And, you know, from that moment, he told me, he goes, look, you saw the new rules. I can't make 55 if I don't have an IV, so I'm going to be at 70. I said, dude, you're small for 70. He goes, trust me, I'm going to be great at 70. And I said, well, I'm never going to tell a guy not to, you know, go up in weight. It's not healthy. It's not healthy. And I saw what I saw with my own eyes, and no IV for him would have been devastating. So I said, all right, we'll do 170, talk to the matchmakers. You know, Sean was great, and he goes, all right, cool, man, what are you thinking? And I'm like, dude, let's do this. And he was like, no, let's do this. And I was like, you know what, let's do that. And we ended up getting Eric Silva. And it was good because it was another tough winner. But I told Jorge this. I said, Jorge, I know you got a ton of fights, dude, and I know that you've been at this for a long time. But now you're in a new weight class. You're coming off of two losses. Let's pretend you're 0-0. Not 0-2, but you're 0-0 at 170. Let's make a real run at this. And he said, all right, let's do it. So I said, we're going to start with this guy. And then he beats Eric Silva.
You mean Cesar Muchanc?
Yeah, Muchanc. Sorry, I keep saying it. Eric, he never fought Eric. So
yes.
Muchanc, yes. Cesar Muchanc. I'm sorry. Cesar Muchanc, yes. And then, you know, here we are. So five years ago, roughly, right after the Ally Akinta fight, right before he went to 70, or right when he went to 70 is when he's been on board with me. That's when we officially had him. But I've known him since his fight with Luis Palomino in G-Force promotion.
Okay, so the Akinta fight does feel like a bit of a crossroads for him, and because he was very frustrated, and that was a big fight, and Akinta had his moment on the microphone as well. There was some bad blood. And then you mentioned the next one was the Muchanc fight, which he did win and looked very good. He won via knockout. And if someone doesn't know the story, they're like, oh, and then he became the star that he became. But that's not entirely true. Loses a split decision to Benson Henderson. Loses a split decision to Lorenz Larkin. Comes back with a win over Ross Pearson. Comes back with a win over Jake Ellenberger. Then the big one against Donald Cerrone. And now he's on a bit of a streak, but loses to Damian Maia. And then loses to Stephen Thompson, the fight I just referred to at Madison Square Garden. And then we get to November of 2017 when he loses that fight, and then he disappears last year. Where did he go?
So here's what happened. After the Thompson fight, and I keep taking the loss. Like, I keep saying, dude, I should have never, you know, pushed you to come back. And he always tells me, he goes, you didn't push me. I needed the money. You know, I fight, bro. That's what I do. It's my job. It's like telling – he always akens it. It's like telling the guy who's supposed to show up to, you know, the hotel and work at the hotel. Like, no, you're not, you know, you're not supposed to go to work that day. You got to get up and go to work every day. So for him, it was like, no, man, we got to do it. At the time, if he beats Thompson, he's right back in the mix. He's right back in the title of contention. That's where I wanted to keep him, because the loss with Damian Maia wasn't as bad as everybody, or not everybody, because I don't think anybody ever took it as a bad loss. It was a very, you know, like, dude, it was 50-50. A lot of people just based on damage thought Jorge won, and the fact that he didn't get submitted and spent, I guess, maybe two rounds on his, you know, with Damian on his back, people are like, dude, that's a win. So it was a tough thing, and, you know, just mentally in his personal life, it was the wrong time. You know, sometimes a lot of guys fight to escape, you know, their personal life, and sometimes guys, you know, in their personal life when it's going great, that's the time to push. In his case, it was the wrong time. You know, personally, just demons that he had, he needed to end them. He needed to get rid of those demons. As he likes to call them. And, you know, after the Thompson fight, I said, okay, dude, I looked at the landscape. Obviously I represent Tyron, and I knew Tyron's situation with his shoulder, and, you know, he was in an injury as well. And I said, dude, let's be real. It's not going to move for a while. So I called one of my buddies up that I had at the Spanish reality show. And I said, hey man, I know you guys just did a brand new show. Is there a way we can plug him in there? And he goes to me, yeah, man, we'd love to have it. We had MMA guys in the show for I think it was a Turkish one or whatever it may be. So I try calling him and I tell him, hey, Jorge, I got you on a reality show. This has been the quickest conversation I've ever had with him. He clicked on me. Like, no shame. He just clicked on me. I said, hello? Hello? And he was like, oh, dude, here we go. But I knew what that meant. And I waited a couple of hours and, you know, I just waited. I called him back. I said, hey, listen, before you click on me, just hear me out. Let me explain to you what this is. And when I broke down what kind of reality show it was, it's not a Temptation Island. It's not a Keeping Up with the Kardashians. It's not one of those things. It's a reality show of actual competition. People get on there to compete, and they're competing against other Olympians, and they're competing against other athletes. So I looked at it in two ways. One, he gets away, and he's able to just kind of just reset and just kind of go through the motions of being alone and not having the problems of the family, not having the problems of the fans, not having the problem of, you know, the pressures of the UFC, nothing like that, and just really disconnecting. It was a really hard time to get him to do that. And even as we were going through the process, getting the contract signed, going to the studio, showing him what it was, every step of the way was like pulling teeth. He really did not want to do it. He got fat. I saw depression in him. It was the first time I've ever seen him like that. You know, he's typically not fat. And what I mean by that is he eats like a fat ass, but he's not necessarily fat. This was the first time I saw him fat. And I was like, man, you know, we gotta get you through this funk. So, you know, it was pulling teeth. And finally, when it was time to leave, he looked at me and he said, this better work. And I said, me too. Shit, I hope it works too, man, you know. But go and have a good time and just enjoy yourself and win this competition is what I kept telling him. Just win it, bro. Feel good winning. As long as you feel good winning, you're going to come back a new person. And he went on the show, and in the first two episodes, he looked like crap. You could tell he was out of shape. You could tell this was not what he wanted. And then after the first week or two, I think it was, that he was there, all of a sudden, he's beating everybody, and he's just kind of killing it. And the stories on that show, I'll leave for him, because they're just way funnier coming out of his mouth than they are mine. But he has really great stories coming out of the show, and like it was like jail. And if anybody's ever been in jail, you know, you've got to make your moves and figure out ways to, you know, do this and do that. And believe me, he figured all that out. So there were really good stories that came out of there. But the most important story came out of him, which was he legitimately got to disconnect. There was no phone. There was no TV. There was no, hey, you've got to do this. Hey, you've got to do that. Hey, why aren't you here? Hey, what? You know, it was just more, what does Jorge want to do? How does Jorge feel? How does his life look? And why is your profession going the way it's going? And you know, when you're this good of a fighter, why is it that you're not, like, why, or not necessarily spotlight, but why aren't you getting those W's the way you should be? And he found the answers. You know, whatever happened over there in that reality show, being in the jungle, alone, with nature, it's changed him. That whoever left Miami for that reality show did not come back. That guy is dead. The Jorge we see now is a brand new Jorge. He came back from that reality show, Ariel, and he was a completely different person. He called me as soon as he left the reality show, and he goes to me, I'm saying it to you like this. Get those guys on the phone. I need to fight whoever. I don't care who it is. Put me in a fight. I'm going to take his soul. I said, okay. Like, as a manager, I'm giddy. Like, I'm smiling ear to ear, saying to myself, my guy wants to go kill somebody. This is what I wanted. Let's do it. So I obviously tell the UFC, I notify the matchmakers. And, you know, Sean, awesome, calls me up and he says, dude, what do you think if we do him versus Nick? I said, duh, send the contract. I'm like, hey, that's not even... I won't even, you know, think twice, and I don't think Jorge does either. We got the contract, showed it to him. He was like, dude, don't even, you know, hesitate. Send it right back. Done deal. We worked out some numbers. Called Sean, told him where we are. Sean was like, let's do it. Send it to Sean. We thought we had Nick Diaz in the bag. Next thing you know, Nick Diaz isn't fighting. He gets furious. When I tell you furious, he's in my office every day telling me, get Sean on the phone, get Sean on the phone, get Sean on the phone. It was a rough moment. So we end up, dude, you're taking me back here. We end up then getting the call that, well, there's a whole backstory on how we ended up getting Till. We didn't get Till just because, oh, hey, I want to go fight Till. There were so many different moving parts, and I think Sean's one of the best matchmakers in the game. He was able to, move so many things, you know, between Anthony and Thompson And, you know, Ponzinibbio just finished winning, but he was injured. He couldn't take the fight. It was a really, 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 really crazy time in the welterweight division. So we ended up getting Till, got him a new deal for actually getting Till, you know, taking a fight on a couple weeks' notice and going into someone's backyard. Nobody wanted to fight Till. Nobody. I'm telling you from top to bottom, nobody wanted to fight Till. And you can't tell this guy you don't want to fight a guy. He's like, yes, I do. I don't care what weight. I don't care where we are. As a matter of fact, if it's in his hometown, I want to be there. And we ended up jumping on a plane, going to London. And, you know, he knocks out Till. And, like he told me, I'm going to take the guy's soul. Not to say that he took Till's soul. I think Till still is an amazing fighter, and he's probably going to be at the top of the heap of whatever division. Even if it's 85, he's probably going to be there. But, he did what he said he was going to do. He went out there, he hushed the London crowd. And then, you know, obviously what happened after the fight, you know, was unfortunate in my opinion. I don't think those things should happen. But, you know, it happened and it went viral. And now you got a star in your hand, you know, a guy who legitimately said, I don't take shit from anybody. I don't care who you are. And he didn't take shit from anybody that night either. And then, boom, now we're hot for a moment. You know, and you know how this sport goes. You're hot today, you're cold tomorrow. And, you know, you kind of like fizzle out and it is what it is. So, you want me to keep going? Or
oh, this is great. I'm loving it. Please. Okay. This is exactly what I wanted.
So, you know, then, you know, after that moment with Till, we get back to the States and, you know, people are calling us. And, you know, all of a sudden, Jorge is a hot name, like I said, but it started to slow down. And he's asking me, he's like, yo, who am I fighting next? And in my opinion, as a manager, I'm looking at him like, you just beat the number three guy in the world. You don't fight anybody under you because it doesn't make any sense. Now you got to fight the next best guy. If you don't fight the next best guy, what are you really doing? Are we advancing ourselves or are we not? And he agreed with me, but he trusted me to the point where it was like, you pick, you do it, don't worry, I'll take care of the business. I'll take care of what I'm supposed to do in the cage. You take care of what I got. What's next for me? I said, okay, cool. So obviously Ben Askren comes onto the scene. He has that, you know, controversial win with Robbie, and everyone's talking. You know, Ben said he wants to fight Jorge. So that's the fight that everybody wanted. In my opinion, we had no reason to fight Ben, and I still think back then we still didn't have a reason to fight Ben. You get the phone call. Hey, we want you guys to fight Ben. Okay, what's in it for us? Well, he should fight. Well, why? Why are we fighting a guy that, in our opinion, didn't beat Robbie Lawler? It wasn't a clear victory. Like, you're putting my guy in a position where he's got to fight a guy that's realistically the worst stylistic matchup for him. He is a wrestler and just a pure wrestler. You know, why would we – give me an incentive here. And we were able to hash it out, and, you know, we were able to get the guaranteed title shot if he beat Askren. And at that point, I said, okay, he's XYZ years old. How much more time? If he gets, you know, past Askren, he's going to get his title shot. So I called him up, and that conversation was like, yo, it looks like they want you to fight Askren. And when he first heard it, he goes, what? That, like, he had really bad things to say. And when I say bad things, not bad in terms of like, oh, he's a bad human being. Just like, why are they putting me with that bum, in his words? You know, like, why do they want me to fight this bum? They want me to end that guy's career. Is that what they want me to do? And that's the kind of conversation I had with him. And just hearing him say that, it made me feel a whole lot better, where I was just like, dude, if you feel like you're going to end this guy, then this is the easy fight. Let's just do it. Why are we not taking it? And he was like, I don't know. Why do they want me to do this? And I said, well, because if you do it, you're going to get a title shot after this. And he goes, enough said. Sign me up. I figured out the timing that he needed. And they initially wanted him to fight in Chicago, and it was just too soon for Jorge. He needed a full camp. And, you know, we said we won't do Chicago. We'll either do the end of June or early July. That was the deal. And we were trying to work end of June, really, more so. And he ended up – hold on one second here. Hold on.
This is amazing stuff here from Abe. I think I've asked two questions. Go ahead.
I was getting –
Are you getting people – I saw you on Embedded. Are people asking you if you're an Arabic pop star?
Dude, I can't believe you did that, man. It's so embarrassing. You know, this is the life. You know what I mean? It's the life I asked for, I guess.
Okay, but, keep going. This is great. So, story time.
Okay, so then right. So then you know, we end up fighting July Ben Askren. We all saw how that ended up. You know, everyone and their grandmother and their mother and everybody else saw it for the next you know, for the next 10, 15 years. We're going to be seeing this knockout just because we're in that stage. You know, we're in that part of social media and whatnot, it's always going to be shown. So we all saw how that happened. And, you know, after that, I told him, congratulations, you have a title shot. And he didn't care. One thing about Jorge, he doesn't care. I'm probably the buffer between him and where he's at. So we ended up sitting down and looking at the landscape, and we said, dude, Colby's going to fight so-and-so. I think what ended up happening with Colby ended up taking the fight because he knew that at that point, if Jorge wins, he's going to get the title shot. But in that, I think he also thought if Jorge loses, Ben was going to get the title shot. So they were going to skip Colby. So Colby ends up taking the fight with Robbie. Colby takes the fight with Robbie. We all saw how that happened. So now Colby was next in line. We knew this. It was never said that if Jorge wins the fight, he gets the next title shot. He gets his next fight was going to be for a title. Hold on one second, guys. Don't.
Abe, in the streets of New York, wheeling and dealing as we speak, while also going through the entire history of Jorge Masvidal's last year. Go ahead. Is it good now?
So then, right, yeah. So then he ends up, we end up negotiating. His next fight will be for the title. So we were prepared to sit for as long as we needed to until we got the phone call, hey, it's time for you to fight for the title. And, you know, everybody could say what they want, but that's really what was negotiated. That's what was put down on paper. Next thing you know, we have this situation with Nate and Anthony. And I think deep down we all knew if Nate wins, it was going to be Nate versus Jorge. I think we all believe that. What ends up happening is if Anthony won, it wasn't going to be Anthony and Jorge, because they have a mutual, like, they know each other. It wasn't really going to happen that way. We were just going to sit and wait for a title shot. Nate ends up beating Anthony. We get the call out, and then I just went right up to Hunter Campbell and I said, dude, we've got to make this fight. There's no way we don't make this fight. And he looked at me and he said, I like this fight a lot. If we do it, we do it. I said, let's get it right. We knew what it was going to be in terms of a payday. We knew what it was going to be in terms of, you know, implications just for the sport in general. This is the biggest possible fight they could make in the last probably, you know, since Brock, I think, was probably the last time we had this kind of pop for a fight. Oh, no, let me take that back. Conor versus Khabib. I'm so sorry. You know, Conor versus Khabib, huge, huge fight. I think this one here in the States probably is bigger for that. I don't know if I'm making any sense there. Worldwide, yeah. Probably Conor versus Khabib is bigger, you know what I mean? But for the U.S., for the fans, for, you know, the U.S. market, this is the biggest fight possible that's been made in the last 3 years. Again, Conor versus Nate was huge. You know, I'm not downplaying that. Those were that's a huge fight. So I'm just saying that's where we are.
Okay, and let me ask you
now. Here we go. Yeah.
What is it like for you to see this now happen? Like, I was just talking with Mark. It's somewhat. It's like emotional for me to see a guy who has been fighting for 16 years and has been through so much and has had the stumbles and has had the bad decisions and was kind of a mid-tier guy, to see him break through this year is unbelievable. It's a great story. No one dislikes Jorge Masvidal and no one really dislikes Nate Diaz, but for you to have met him and devised this plan and to take the year off and the reality show and the clarity that gave him and the fight with Till, like, to see it all come to fruition and to be on the cusp of something gigantic at Madison Square Garden, and then who knows what that win would lead him to. What's that like for you?
Man, you know, like, I guess maybe it's something, you know, I actually talked about my older brother about this recently, and I said, man, you know, for other people, it seems like a huge thing. For us, it just feels like work. Like, it's what you're supposed to do, you know? Like, I look at every one of my guys on my roster, and I'm like, how can I amplify their star power? How can I make them bigger than what they are? And not bigger than what they are, they all shine. It's taking their shine and making it just so much brighter than anybody else's or whoever else's is there. And, you know, some guys have it. Like, I got, like, Tyron. Tyron doesn't need me. Tyron does his stuff. Tyron does his stuff on his own, and he does a great job doing it, you know, to deal with the music and all that. He does a fantastic job. But we're on the phone with Tyron all the time, bouncing ideas off of each other's heads. And, you know, it's really just trying to get them to the water. You know, you lead a horse to water, and it's up to them to drink it. I can't – listen, I didn't come up with 3 pieces and a soda. Jorge did. Right? Everybody else came up with Street Jesus. Actually, I think Mikey Brown came up with Street Jesus, and it's kind of caught on. It's pretty funny for the most part. But it's just different avenues, different things. You know, the Scarface thing. That's a whole story in itself as well. If we have time. If we don't, I'll skip it.
In terms of the Taylor and all that?
The suit and cause, so here's what happened. After the Askren fight, I said to him, we're going to be fighting Colby or Usman. And as we all know, Colby and Usman, their trash talking, let's say, is not up to par. Like, you gotta look at the good trash talkers in MMA, and the good trash talkers in MMA are Conor McGregor. Give me another one here. I know you're... I think it does...
Nate Diaz?
It does.
Chael, historically?
Nate reminds me a lot of Jorge. They're not going to go just trash talk to trash talk. They're going to, you know, you need a good...
Johnny Bones, Israel Adesanya?
John does his thing sometimes. Adesanya does his thing sometimes. I think you know, you got a couple of guys. Yoel's actually
Henry
a good trash talker. When Yoel wants to try... Henry, I love Henry, but Henry needs...
Henry, what's up, Harry? You still big time me, man? I still can't get on your show, man.
Oh.
Headline name is Gene. I can't be on your fucking show, man.
Jorge Masvidal cameo.
There, you see that?
How are you, Jorge?
Good, my brother. Finally, you make time for me, man. I'm headlining your city, and you still can't even make time for me, my brother?
Listen, you're so big time. I see you on all these shows. Mr. Masvidal, and I have to talk to your manager about you because I can't get to you anymore. You're too big time for me.
No, that's a lie, man. You rather have those punks that just talk and don't fight, like that idiot that wears the MAGA hats, and the other guy that's always calling you to be on his shows on Mondays. You want that pure violence, you get a hold of me, man. I'm gonna start playing hardball. You want me? No. You can't have certain nut sniffers in there.
Okay. Well, I don't want that. Listen, I'll just say sometimes it's hard to get to you, but you know you always have a home here. We were covering you back in 2008 when no one wanted to talk to you, Jorge. You know that, right?
I know. So it's funny that I'm doing all this New York stuff. I haven't seen you. You weren't at ESPN Studios. I heard you had shit to do. You had the trash to take out. You couldn't make time for your boy. All right. It's cool, man.
Never. I love you. You know that.
I miss you too, baby.
We'll see. You're feeling good, Jorge. Everything's good. The fight's on.
Oh, I'm ready to go. Yeah, the fight is
never off.
Was never off. You know, it was a little bumpy roads, but it's beyond on, man. That light switch is staying on.
Okay, well, I wish you the best, my man.
Thank you, my
brother. And we'll talk to you on Monday, hopefully.
So, yes, sir. Hell yeah, you will.
All right. There we go. Wow, how about that? A little Jorge cameo at the end.
I would know what's going to happen in this way. But, so let me tell you about the Scarface suit. In my opinion, this is actually a really good story. After the Ben Askren win, we knew he was going to either be fighting for the title or, in my opinion, it was going to be a big fight. I didn't know where, I didn't know who or what, but, again, the trash-talking with Colby and Usman, I think, you know, it's kind of, like, they can't sell a fight. Maybe they can sell a fight if there was another person involved, but just, you know, together and putting it there, I don't know. Not my style. Maybe it's not for me. I'm not trying to, you know, shit on them like that. It's just not for me. It's not my kind of fun. So I told Jorge, I said, man, here's what's going to happen. You're going to be in this press conference or whatever with whoever is going to be showing up. And let's be real. It's going to be terrible. They're going to say the really corniest things you could think of because in our opinion, I say our because it's mine and his opinion. It's not just mine. It's mine and his opinion. It was corny. It's like corny things that they say. They don't say anything that's really like, oh, what a burn. You know, like Conor does some real good stuff sometimes. So you're going to have a good press conference with him. You're going to have a good press conference with Nate sometimes. You know, but Nate needs that guy that's going to come and bring it out of him. So I told him, dude, we've got to leave the people with something that they say, oh, my God. And it didn't have to be, you know, BS or anything like that. And I said, dude, people, they've already been drawing things up of him in Scarface, and he already walks out to the Scarface theme song. And I said, bro, how cool would it be if you showed up to the press conference, your very next one for your title fight, because, again, I did not know it was going to be Nate, and we do it like this. And the suit maker, Mohan, contacted me after the Till fight, and we were supposed to get suited from before, never happened, and then after he beat Askren, I said, dude, can you come down to Miami? And he did his suit down to Miami and got him, you know, fitted and all that for that custom Scarface suit. Then we get the Nate fight, and I just thought it was brilliant because these guys are not going to trash talk each other. Neither one, not Jorge nor Nate. We knew this going into it, and I said, we have to leave the people with something where they say to themselves, damn, this is going to be good. Whether the shit-talking works, whether the media asks the right questions, who cares? I need them to leave. I need people to understand visually this is going to be good. And it's a different visual than Henry showing up with a magician hat and a snake. Like, I don't know. To me, that's, I guess, I don't know. I'm not for me. It's just not for me. I didn't necessarily think that was the way to do it. You're playing into something that you're not, whereas wearing a Scarface suit, you're still wearing a badass suit. You're not wearing, you know, it's not a costume. This is a suit he could wear whenever the hell he wants. You know, it's really a piece of thing. We're never going to see Henry in a cape and a hat again and carrying a snake. You know what I mean? Like, it's just weird. To me, that was the way I saw that. So that was the idea behind the suit and having him, you know, put the suit on and go out there and look that way. I think we hit a home run with that. I think we did. I think we did a good job.
It was the most memorable thing from that press conference, and it's interesting because very few guys, American fighters, are synonymous with an area code. The Diaz brothers have always been synonymous with 209, and now you're starting to see Miami get behind Jorge, the 305, which speaks to just how popular he's become. We could talk about him forever. We are approaching the end of the journey here, but it's amazing to hear these stories, and I maintain that you have played a huge part in this. I would be remiss, though, Abe, if I don't ask you about what happened recently at the PFL event. I know this is a pending legal matter, and I don't want to end on this sour note, but is there anything that you can say about the alleged altercation with fellow manager Ali Abdelaziz in Vegas a couple of weeks ago?
You know, I think when you can't handle yourself like a man, you do things like a child. And, you know, I don't want to pour any more gasoline on a fire, but the fire's already been lit and it's burning hot already. So, you know, I'm going to say this. I was at a PFL event that I was invited to by the PFL. I didn't have a plan to go there. I wasn't thinking to myself, oh my God, I've got to go see the PFL today. That was never my motive. I end up going, I'm sitting there with my client, Anthony Pettis. He was just in town. I actually invited Anthony to come and hang out with me just so we could sit down and just talk. And, you know, he's my client in Vegas. Why not? Let's just do it. We're sitting there. I actually see Ali. I understand that the PFL is his, you know, sort of baby. You know, between him and Ray Sefo, they kind of own that thing. And, you know, it's very similar to what happened with the World Series of Fighting. Those two guys have you know, manipulated those organizations to do as they want and as they please. And, you know, one is now defunct. The other one is bleeding terribly. So, you know, like, it's just what happened. And I knew that I was in sort of enemy territory. It's like almost like, you know, a blood going into a Crip neighborhood or a Crip going into a blood neighborhood. But, see, the way I looked at it was, I'm not a gangster. I'm not a fighter. I have no beef with anybody. In my opinion, I don't have any beef. A week and a half prior to this, Ali actually picked up the phone and called me and was trying to talk to me about some stuff. And I kind of cut him off. And I told him, look, Ali, man, I'm not your friend, dude. Don't come say hi to me in front of people. Like, your reputation is shit. I don't want to have that. Like, I feel my reputation in this sport is really good. I've never really done anybody wrong. I don't treat people with disrespect. I've never called anybody out their names. I try not to talk shit. It's hard. I'm not going to lie to you guys. It really is hard not to talk shit. But I have a fun personality. I'm not a guy that's really trying to get out there and start issues. So I told him, I said, do me a favor, dude. Not because I'm going to fight you. Not because I'm going to do anything with you. But if you come and you try to say hi to me, I'm going to turn my back to you and I'm going to walk away. You're not a kind of guy that I want to be involved with. So please don't make it seem like we are cool. We're not. But I don't have to hate you and you don't have to hate me. Just you go your way and I'll go my way. Dude, there's 1,000 professions where, you know, there's a Hilton on one side and a Marriott on the other. Do you think those two people or those two owners are fighting each other? No way. They're just going about their business and they do their business, you know? So that's the way we approached it. He came. I was actually sitting cape side with Anthony, and I saw him, and to avoid any problems, I got up, took Anthony, and moved away from the cage side, and just went to go to the VIP area that PFL had, and we sat there, we were having a good time, we were watching the fights, we were standing up, just enjoying ourselves. I'm watching the fights on the big screen, my head is turned, all of a sudden, I feel someone tugging on my shirt, and I thought it was someone I knew that was coming to play with me, tugged on my shirt as I'm turning to put my drink down, because I had a glass of water or whatever I had in my hand, soda maybe. I put it down, and as I'm putting it down, I get punched in the face, slapped in the face, whatever you want to call it. Whatever it is, I get punched in the face. Next thing you know, as I'm coming back to see what happened, as, you know, just natural instincts, like, oh, wait, I got hit, let's go. There's a short, big black dude. I say short, big, because he's just wide, you know, in my face, and I go, oh, this is not good. I see what happened. I see Ali right behind him, and, you know, Ali's running his mouth. Anthony Pettis then tries to come, you know, help me out, and I go to grab Anthony because, you know, our job is not, like, our job as managers is to protect our fighters and to boost their profile. Anthony Pettis gets into a fight at the PFL, and the headline becomes Anthony Pettis got into a fight with the PFL, blah, blah, blah. Next thing you know, there's legal action going up against Anthony, and it's just wrong. So I hold Anthony back. I realize who did it, and I said, cool, no problem. I didn't want to start a public war or anything with him, and you know, the stuff I've gotten from his fighters, from my fighters, you know, like, it's just, I don't know. I think it backfired on him more than it did on me. You know, people will say, oh, dude, you know, you snitched, you did this, you did that. No, I didn't snitch. Somebody sucker punched me. He didn't come up to me and say, yo, I want to fight you, or hey, you know, why don't we take this outside, or hey, why don't we go in the back? That's a man. I respect that out of someone. He's not a man. That's not a man to me. That, to me, that's someone, that's a kid. That's what a kid does. That's a bully, and it's not going to happen anymore. So, yes, I did press charges. Yes, I do have an active restraining order against him. Yes, I will be seeing him in court. Yes, I am going to be taking everybody that's associated with him to court. I have no reason to physically harm anyone. However, I don't think anyone has a reason to physically harm me. I did nothing wrong. So, and then I've heard different stories. One story is I did this to this guy. The other story is I did this, or I tweeted this from Twitter, or I did that. And I'm like, dude, if these are the things that trigger you, I feel sorry for the guys you represent. I absolutely feel sorry for those guys. Those guys are all indentured servants to him. It's sad, actually. He is a, you know, whatever. It is what it is. I don't want to keep going into it. I don't want to spend too much energy on it. I've actually gone over it. I'm going to let the legal process take place. But it's wrong. It should never happen. It shouldn't happen anywhere. And, you know, I hope, I wish him luck. You know, God bless him more than anything. I hope he lives to be, you know, fruitful, and he finds peace in whatever demons he has inside of him.
Abe, I know you don't want to harp on this, but I'm just curious. Where's the restriction order, the restraining order? What jurisdiction is it in?
Well, so a restraining order that's filed anywhere in the country, I found this out, whatever state you're in has to respect it. Because in other words, if you get assaulted in New York but you live in Miami, whether you file the restraining order in Miami or in New York, as long as you notify the police department that you have an active restraining order against the individual in whatever city you're in, it's fine. So I filed in Miami, Dade County, and it will be, you know, I've already notified the UFC. I've notified the police department as well that I have an active restraining order against him. So he can't be anywhere within 500 feet of me, and I feel good. I feel safe.
Okay. We'll leave it at that for now. I really appreciate you doing this, Abe. It was fun to look back at the work both you and Jorge did to get to this point. And I know it's a really busy time for you guys in New York, and you've got I could do a whole other interview on all your clients. You're going to Russia next week to be with Greg Hardy, yeah, cornering him. You got Jones, yeah, situation brewing. You got Mike Perry returning, Anthony Pettis, Brendan Lochner. On and on it goes. Yeah. But for now, we will leave it at that. I appreciate the time as always, and I want to wish you guys
the best
this week.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you, as always.
All right, there he is, one of the most powerful managers in the sport, Abraham Kawa, the younger brother, by the way, of Malky Kawa, who has been on my program for many years in the past, of course, working with the likes of John Jones. His brother, Abe, has emerged as one of the more powerful managers in the game because Malky started to focus a little more on the NFL. But as you can see, just like his brother, he enjoys to talk. He's a great speaker. He's quite loquacious, as one might say, but that was fun. It was fun to take a trip down memory lane and see how far Jorge Masvidal has come, and I maintain that he has played a big part in all of this. So there you go. All things Jorge Masvidal, Nathan Diaz. We've got a lot more coverage to come for all of you all week long right here on ESPN MMA. We've got the open workouts later this evening. We've got media day tomorrow morning. We've got the official weigh-ins on Friday morning. We've got the ceremonial weigh-ins. We've got the UFC 245 press conference on Friday. We've got apparently The Rock making appearance on Friday at the press conference as well. We've got my radio show, as I mentioned, 5 o'clock here locally, but also online. We've got the Ariel and the Bad Guy pre-show at 7 p.m. We've got a ton of great content right now on ESPN.com, courtesy of Mark Raimondi, who joined us earlier, and the rest of the team over at ESPN MMA. We've got everything that you could want to get ready for UFC 244, including this podcast, and I hope you enjoyed it. I want to urge you all to continue to rate, subscribe, review, and do all the things that you do to help us continue to do shows like this. We appreciate it greatly. And I also want to thank TST in the back, who I would call upon to say a word or two here, but he's been bothering me that the show has been going too long. So I don't know. I feel conflicted. Like, does he want to talk or does he want me to wrap up? I'm not sure. Usually when he wants me to wrap up, he plays the music, but he hasn't played the music yet. So
well,
does
because
that mean he wants...
Ariel, yeah. I had a review to read for
you,
but you and
said,
you never brought it up.
Well,
because
you said we went too long. So I thought,
never said such a thing. You're making this up. By the way, I'm coming to New York City this weekend. Watch the fights. Are you going to hang out with me? Maybe share some matzo balls with me instead of Action Bronson?
No. You, by the way, you don't say share some matzo balls. That's not the right...
share? I don't know.
You can enjoy a soup together, but, I mean, preferably not the same bowl. But maybe we'll see each other. Wait, where's the review? Now you got me excited about the review.
No, never mind. Forget it.
No
forget
review?
It.
Was it a good review?
Yes, it was a good review. Do you want it?
Sure.
All right. So Ian OC from Boston says that Ariel's podcast... actually, hold on. I brought special music for this, a little spooky music here.
Oh.
So let's bring it going.
Halloween themed?
Halloween. Okay. Ian OC from Boston. Ariel's podcast helps me get through my week. Sherdog Radio introduced me to MMA podcasts, and Ariel made me fall in love with them. Top-notch interviews and honest updates on the key stories buzzing in the MMA world. When Ariel took a Monday off for Rosh Hashanah, there was a...
Yes.
I say it wrong?
Oh, you nailed it. Just like Andrew Luck would.
There was a noticeable void in my week. My girlfriend even commented that I seemed like something was bothering me.
Wow.
But not to worry, he dropped bonus content that week to make up for it, and all was right in the world. Shout out to New York Rick and Razor Ramundi, still deciding on TST.
Wow. That's a phenomenal comment. Well done. And we urge you to continue to leave us comments like that on our page, on our Apple Podcast page, I think Google Play as well, maybe Spotify. But anyway, we'll read them if they're good. And I like the music, by the way, TST. You've come a long way. Corporate Jake hasn't quite jumped on the bandwagon of changing the music up, although he did it this week. And, of course, New York Rick took umbrage with some of the things you said about him last week. I don't know if you saw that.
I did see that. I did see that little Twitter chain we had going with Corporate Jake, New York Rick. But we'll all be in New York City, Madison Square Garden, this weekend, so maybe we can all make amends.
That'd be nice. Will you watch the fight, even though it's on a Saturday and you you respect Screenless Saturday, or because you're watching it live, it's okay?
I'll be at the fight, so it'll be totally okay.
First UFC ever?
First UFC event ever. I'm really excited. I hear it's nuts. Like nothing that you've ever seen before.
This is
better
an
than
amazing
NBA
thing.
Finals, better than Super Bowls. I can't wait.
It's amazing because when I first met you several months ago, you knew nothing about this sport. In fact, dare I say you were a hater of mixed martial arts. And now you're all in. You love it. You're dropping Israel Adesanya references in the chat channel we got over here. You're a Colby guy. I mean, it's just amazing.
I can't wait. When you were here in Bristol the other day, I was saying, I was trying to get some inside info if you knew who McGregor was going to fight next. And I said, I want to see him fight Justin Gaethje. And you're like, oh, whoa, whoa, it's a hot take, hot take. I'm like, is it? But apparently I have takes now.
I just didn't know you had any sort of insight or takes on mixed martial arts. So you have come a long way. You're all grown up, TST, and we appreciate your interest in the sport and the product and the shows, everything that you do for us. So thank you very much as always. And thank you very much to Mark Ramundi. And thank you very much to Abraham Kawa. And how about thank you very much to Jorge Masvidal for that cameo. You see, when you listen to this program, you never know who's going to stop by. Anyone, anytime, any place. It's amazing. Fun show, fun day. We got a lot more fun to come. UFC 244 here in New York City. The best part is I don't have to get on a plane. I love it. The Mecca, world's most famous arena, Saturday night. It's going to be great. I'll see you then. Enjoy the fights.